From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network, Dr. Valter Longo from the University of Southern California is interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling about a unique mutation that appears to protect some people from cancer.
Dr. Valter Longo is an associate professor of gerontology and biological sciences and the Paul Glenn Chair of Biogerontology at the University of Southern California. He is interested in understanding the mechanisms of aging in yeast and in the mammalian brain and in looking at new ways to treat and prevent cancer. Dr. Longo, thanks for joining us. Would you describe Laron syndrome and then tell us what is so unique about the 300 or so people around the world who have Laron?
So Laron syndrome is a syndrome discovered by the person giving it the name Laron. Zvi Laron is an Israeli scientist, and basically is a syndrome caused by a mutation in the growth hormone receptor or a variety of mutations in the growth hormone receptor, and are believed to cause the inactivation of the growth hormone receptor. And what's so special about it is, well, first of all, the people that have two copies of the mutation are very small in stature, and they have some increased rate of cardiovascular disease, at least in a subpopulation, in a portion of them. That's what's been observed. What is special about them is that they are the equivalent, at least in our view, they are the equivalent of the mouse for which that has a mutation in the growth hormone receptor, and that also has the record for mammalian lifespan extension, meaning these mice they have a similar mutation to the Laron, live 50% longer. They have much reduced cancer rates. Actually, I should correct myself there. The cancer rates have not been determined for the growth hormone receptor knockout mice, but the lifespan has. So these mice live longer, but the cancer rates in very similar dwarf mice that also have growth hormone deficiency have been shown by two labs to be reduced by 50% or more.
Most of the work on Laron dwarfism has taken place on those living in Ecuador. How long has this group, again, been under study, and what was determined to have been ultimately responsible for, as I read it, no reported cases of cancer or diabetes in the Ecuadorian group?
Actually, our hypothesis originally did not come from mice. It came from yeast. Saccharomyces cerevisiae, they had mutations in the RAS and AKT pathway, acid kinase pathways. And so years ago, I wrote a review for Science basically saying that these mutations not only were causing lifespan extension, but they were also, they appeared to protect the DNA. And very, very well. And so then the hypothesis was that this was going to also reduce DNA damage and possibly cancer in mammals. And then it wasn't us, but it was the Barkey lab and the Miller lab that showed that, in fact, mice with growth hormone receptor deficiency, or at least growth hormone deficiency, lived longer and had reduced cancer. And so then when I heard there was a human population down in Ecuador that had this particular mutation, I mean, I had contacted Zvi Laron, and he basically had told me back in 2003 that he didn't know much about cancer. I mean, a lot of his patients were spread around Europe, and nobody really knew what they were dying of. But then I heard there was a major portion of the Larons in the mountains of Ecuador, and there was somebody named Jaime Guevara that was following them. In fact, he had been following them for 22 years, or at least at that time, 20 years or so. So I invited him up for a conference here that I organized in Los Angeles, and then within a year I went down there and started studying that, this population with them. We were, of course, very interested in cancer. And so for 22 years, he has seen no cancer in any of these 86 original. Now there is, I think, 80 or so left. Six of them have died, all of them of cardiovascular diseases, and one of a car accident, actually.
What specifically, though, about this mutation is leading to this decreased incidence of cancer and, as I said, in diabetes in that Ecuadorian group?
Yeah, diabetes is not clear yet. Everybody's very surprised. But the cancer, again, if we go back to the signaling in the simple yeast and then the mice that are growth hormone and IGF-1 deficient, the hypothesis is that, in fact, there is the reduction in IGF-1 and other growth factors potentially is sending the cells, or many of the cells that could be responsible for cancer, into a protected mode. Maybe non-dividing, but more than the dividing or non-dividing state, we believe it is the state of the cell switching to a high protection mode. And so in yeast, we see some remarkable protection against DNA damage when we switch these pathways, these IGF-1-like signaling pathways. So we have pretty good evidence that, for example, there is reduced oxidative damage even in the non-dividing cells, and there is a reduced activation of these error-prone pathways, so the pathways that can attempt to repair DNA but in fact cause the DNA damage.
Let's talk a little more about insulin growth factor 1, which is also known as IGF-1. What's its role in normal health? And you just discussed some of the damage that it can cause in diseases and cancer and diabetes. How does it exactly do that? You were talking about that it damages the DNA, but again, just for listeners who might not be familiar with it, IGF-1 in normal health, IGF's role in people who have disease.
Yeah. So again, In the aging world, many of us are very, very familiar with these pathways and what they can do. And now the IGF-1, even though it can have a short-term anti-apoptotic role, so meaning that in the short term it can actually protect the cells from dying. And we think it's sort of an emergency program, right? Very short-term, don't die because you need to grow, you need to have particular functions. But in the long term, what we're all observing, the yeast, C. elegans, Drosophila, mice, what we're all observing is that it has a slow pro-aging effect. So as an activation of these pathways, including the TOR, RAS, AKT, cis kinase, and all these pathways are really signaling to the cell that it is time to grow, it is time to focus and function rather than on long-term protection. And this makes sense, of course, from an evolutionary standpoint. The result of that is there are transcription factors that are downregulated, such as in mammals, FOXO, in C. elegans, a FOXO-like transcription factor called DAF16, and in yeast, zinc finger transcription factors. And so these transcription factors sort of act as master regulator or protective systems. And so when they're downregulated, the protective system go down, and those protective systems include, for example, the antioxidant enzyme, superoxide dismutases. Again, evidence from multiple systems and from our own work, for example, in neurons and mice. So that's the way it works. Now, there is still a controversy. I just wrote a review with Michael Lieber and Jan Vig in Nature Reviews. We're arguing that it's not about cell growth, but it's about cell protection. I mean, Michael Pollack and others are arguing that it's all about apoptosis and cell division, so maybe it's a combination of those.
Based on your study and knowledge of the Laron dwarfs and on your work with mice, both of which have this mutation, what's the goal of your team's research long term? What are you trying to do with this knowledge?
For many years, focusing on yeast, right, in mammalian cells, I always heard sort of the opinion of the people working with people. And they're very skeptical, right? And so I think that the point of studying the Larons is to really test the hypothesis with the ultimate system and the human body. What happens to our prediction was that you will have reduced DNA damage and reduced cancer. And then when they did the work in mice, it actually worked. And then, of course, we had to find the population that had the same problem or same mutation, the human population, the same problem or mutation. And we found it. And sure enough, after 22 years of observation by the people that have been close to them, nobody's seen cancer in them. Doesn't mean they're not going to ever have it, but certainly that's a very, very good start.
I assume that the goal is to create drugs that replicate the Laron's mutation. Where are we in terms of that development, and how long might we expect to see something on the market based on this research to be used as potential cancer treatments?
Well, we're working on it. I founded a company that is working very hard on it. I think it's a little bit more complicated than just mimicking the Laron mutation, and the reason is that these people, some of them make it to very old age, but again, some of them get the cardiovascular diseases early. So I think we need to be very careful, because obviously this is in the Lipitor category, right? And it would be a drug that you take when you're fairly healthy. So I think, you know, we need to do more work making sure that that we can eliminate the side effects, and or what are the side effects caused by. So the good news is that you don't get diabetes or cancer, and you get maybe more cardiovascular. So it looks like it is 2-1, right? And but obviously we need to find out much more about the cardiovascular diseases. What does it happen in all of them? Does it happen in a subpopulation of them that are have very bad eating habits? And that's what it appears to be, for example, right? It appears to be that some of the fairly young Laron patients that were not eating like the Ecuadorians used to eat, and they were starting to sort of adopt a Western diet, those are the ones that have been reported to die as early as in their 30s and 40s of cardiovascular diseases. So obviously, before we can talk about anti-cancer drugs, something that somebody will take for 10 years or 20 years, maybe somebody that has a high rate of cancer in the family, we will have to make sure that we know very well the side effects.
My final question is, you said that you founded a company. What's the name of the company? When did you found it? I assume it's based on this work we've been talking about. And what are some of the projects you have going on at that company right now?
This company was founded this year, actually. And our main project is not really on the cancer prevention, although we believe that the drugs are going to work also for that. And so our main focus has been on chemotherapy protection. And so we are creating drugs that can differentially protect normal cells and cancer cells. So the idea is that, in fact, since these pathways control protection of the cell, they control protection either, as I was mentioning earlier, either from the damage within the cell or from the damage from outside of the cell. So chemotherapy will represent the damage coming from the outside, and oxidants and other intracellular toxins represent the damage from the inside. So I think the first application we will see, and we're very confident about this, and maybe as soon as the next 5 years, is the differential protection against chemotherapy. And in fact, we already are following many patients that are, there is no drug yet, but what we published 6 months ago has to do with fasting, which activates the same pathways, downregulates the growth hormone IGF pathways and protects yeast, mammalian cells, and mice. Now there is a number of patients that we've been following that are using the fasting, and it seems to be working pretty well against chemotherapy. So then I think the first application we're going to see of these drugs is going to be in the differential protection of patients and not cancer cells against chemotherapy.
And what's the name of your company?
DSR Pharmaceuticals.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. New GenCasts are posted every week, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghaus saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.